132296 CV, Lloyd Michael Hamilton versus ConocoPhillips Company and Burlington Resources Oil and Gas Company LP.
May it please the court. My name is Robert DeBose and I represent Mike Hamilton. The primary issue in this appeal is whether the two agreements that Mr. Hamilton signed, the lease and the production sharing agreement, provided his consent as a surface owner for a well project that would use his surface but would include production from other leases. There are other issues in this appeal. There's an issue about declaratory judgment, one about the economic loss rule and trespass, and the disposition of some counterclaims. But because our time is short and this consent issue is the heart of the case, unless the court has questions on those, I plan to focus on the consent issue because it's so central and because it's a little more complicated. Mm-hmm. So let me just try to flesh out why you have a lot of dry legal reasoning in these briefs, but why consent is so important here. We're talking about a drilling pad that is about 4.5 football fields, the size of 4.5 football fields. And that's described in Appendix 8 that shows the plat for that pad. It's also about three times the height of a tall human being. And you would see that in Plaintiff's Exhibit 37 in the record. So this is an enormous structure. And that's why, the cases talk generally about a burden on the surface, but this is a huge burden on the surface. And from a legal point of view, the reason why consent is so important is a long line of Texas Supreme Court cases has said that a lease is limited to the purposes that are stated in the lease. And if the lessor does not provide consent for a particular purpose, then the lease is limited in that respect and does not allow other purposes. So the starting point, I think in this case, is the lease itself. I'm also going to talk about the production sharing agreement, but I think we have to start with the lease because the production sharing agreement refers back to the lease as far as limits on the production sharing agreement. The lease did not give Mr. Hamilton's consent to use the surface of his property for off-leased premises production. Now, the Texas Supreme Court has repeatedly held that the granting paragraph in a lease delineates the only purposes for which the lessee may use the property. Now, let me talk about the distinction between a purpose and an activity that's done to perform that purpose, because I think it's critical to reconcile the two lines of cases that the parties in this case cite. Burlington cites cases that have, it's a longstanding rule in Texas law, that if a lease states a particular purpose, the lessee has the ability to pursue activities that may not be specified in the lease so long as they're reasonably necessary for the purpose of the lease. So, for instance, if a well is drilled on your property, the purpose is to produce oil and gas from that property, and courts have implied authorization or easements to do various activities for that particular purpose. The line of cases that we rely on is different because it focuses on the purpose stated in the lease. And where a purpose is not stated in the lease, courts do not generally imply another purpose that's not stated in the lease. And so where courts are very liberal in implying an authorization to do activities that are consistent with the purpose, courts are very strict in saying the lease is limited to that particular purpose in the lease. And the primary case for our position is the Texas Supreme Court decision in Robinson in the 1970s and all the Court of Appeals cases that have followed it that says that standard grant language in a lease that authorizes oil and gas on a particular property is limited to production for that property, production from that property. Now, if you look at our lease, we have a bench exhibit. Paragraph 1 of that is the granting clause, and it describes the purpose of the lease as well as various activities that can be done.
And counsel,
yes.
Do the contracts need to expressly grant the authority for horizontal, the horizontal off-lease production? There you go.
Yes.
Or is it sufficient that the contracts do not prohibit it?
And that's why the Robinson case and the cases following it are so important. The answer is the first. And that is because the lease is limited by Texas law to the purpose stated in the lease, and production off-lease under Robinson is not within that purpose. It is outside of that purpose and is not authorized by the lease provision that authorizes drilling with respect to a particular piece of land. And so the purpose of this lease provision is, it expressly states, oil and gas production, and then it's with reference to a particularly defined property, which is the Hamilton Ranch. So this is the Hamilton Ranch lease. Under Robinson and its progeny, that purpose is limited. And so if you're using the property for off-lease production or anything to benefit another lease, then it's outside the purpose of the lease. And that is what cannot be implied.
So that's just starting with the lease alone, but you're going to get to the production sharing agreement, which is their argument, of course.
Yes. Okay. Yes, and let's talk about that. The production sharing agreement, I need to grab my exhibit. The focus of the parties has been on paragraph 5 of the production sharing agreement, which includes an easement for various activities for sharing wells. And I'm going to primarily focus on that, but let me start because I think it's important to understand the context of the rest of the agreement in which that exists. The primary purpose of this production sharing agreement is stated in the third bullet point, and that's not in our exhibit, but if you look at the agreement, it's stated in the third bullet point of the introductory paragraph. And that purpose is to establish a calculation to allocate production from one or more sharing wells. And most of the agreement, most of the provisions in that agreement are about how to allocate production and the rules specific to allocate production. And that formula, and this is important, that formula applies regardless of whose surface a well is drilled on. So for instance, if a well is drilled on the surface of an adjacent lease and goes under Mr. Hamilton's property, it provides a formula for calculating, determining production on his property, and calculating what royalties will be paid and what will be assigned to the two different leases. But that does not mean that the sole purpose or a purpose of this production sharing agreement is to authorize the use of his surface. Again, we'll talk about paragraph 5, but that's not the primary purpose of this, and this agreement has effect, for instance, if a well is drilled on adjacent property and goes under Mr. Hamilton's property.
So the appellees are arguing that the PSA and the lease combined permit them to drill horizontal sharing wells. So you agree with that, but what you disagree with is that these combined documents do not authorize the use of his surface.
Correct. Okay. Exactly right. Now, surface is addressed in paragraph 5, and this is a very unusual provision because it does two things. The first is it walks through and it creates an implied easement for a long list of various activities, and it adds activities to what are in the lease. And by the way, the lease doesn't limit the activities except to the extent that they have to be reasonably necessary for the purpose of the lease. But it walks through additional activities that the lessee may do. But then it has this provision at the end that's quite unusual. You won't see this in many production sharing agreements. Subject, however, to the following limitations, terms, and provisions, all above ground surface use and surface operations described herein shall be conducted in accordance with and governed and limited by the existing terms of the lease. Now, we know from Robinson that the standard grant language in paragraph one of the lease contains a limit on purposes not recognized in the lease. This provision incorporates that limit. So this is essentially a provision where there is an easement to do these various activities that is triggered if Mr. Hamilton consents to a different purpose in the lease. But there's no document that does that. It's typically done in a surface use agreement, but Mr. Hamilton didn't sign one, as the record shows. His stepmother, who he'd been in litigation with, signed it at, claiming that she was a surface owner of the lease when the land agent knew, the landman knew otherwise.
Mr. DeBoe,
if
paragraph 5 did not have that subject to D, subject to and under D for the lease, if that didn't exist, if it ended with D and the subject to was removed, would you agree that they would have an easement for the surface?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's fair. So, let me talk briefly about why Burlington's interpretation of this provision is unreasonable. The first point they say is the subject to provision only applies to subpart D of this list of surface easements. And from an outline structure, it might look like that. But if you look at the actual language of the subject to provision, it says the opposite. It says all above ground surface use and surface operations discussed herein, meaning within this provision, within this agreement, shall be limited by the terms of the lease. So, and we haven't cited this, but there's a long line of cases saying that while headings in a contract may be important, they're not as important as the actual language of the provision itself. And just to give you one cite for that, the RSUI case, which is 466 Southwest 3rd, 113 at page 121, that's a Texas Supreme Court case. Secondly, Burlington argues that the subject, however, to clause only applies to some other limitations in the lease and not to paragraph one. But again, that's not what this provision says. It says surface use is limited by the existing terms and provisions of the lease. It doesn't say it's limited by a subset of the limits in the lease. Third, Burlington argues that Mr. Hamilton's reading of this subject, however, to clause renders both paragraph 5 and the production sharing agreement as a whole meaningless, but it does not. Again, the parties contemplated that there might be a separate agreement granting permission to use the surface, and if there were, this provision would be triggered and would specifically authorize additional activities on the property. Because the lease doesn't limit those activities. It only limits activities that are done for a purpose outside the lease. And that's why that subject to provision brings in the limitation that the Supreme Court has read into paragraphs like paragraph one of the lease. And then finally, Burlington argues that there should be an implied easement. Their argument for an implied easement is that the whole purpose of the production sharing agreement is to drill a sharing well on Mr. Hamilton's property. But again, it doesn't say that. It can apply, the whole purpose is to establish a calculation for sharing production, and that applies equally whether the well is drilled on his property or on an adjacent property that goes through to his property. Finally, just briefly, there is no pooling in this case, and there are a long line of cases, Texas Supreme Court and Hegar, and actually the pooling provision of this lease recognizes that where you have pooling, essentially all the surfaces are treated the same, and you could do what they're trying to do, which is use one surface to produce from another property that's been pooled. But there is no evidence in this case that there was any pooling. And so that line of cases, that provision of the contract does not apply.
Let me ask you a question before you take the seat, sir, regarding the surface use agreement, because you do spend some time in your brief arguing about the surface use agreement that was obtained, whether it was properly or not. But appellees are arguing that they aren't really relying on the surface use agreement for what they believe they are able to do with the lease and the PSA. Is that an argument that we can then dispense with? Because according to their arguments, the surface use agreement only gave them the consent to remove trees and build roads. That's all they needed consent for. They didn't need this agreement, the surface use agreement, in order to drill or so, to.
As I understand the argument, it's really a small subset of the major dispute here. They are not, as I understand it, arguing that the surface use agreement that Mary Ellen Hamilton signed grants permission to drill a horizontal well from the surface. They are arguing that it authorizes tree removal and road use as an alternate argument if they lose the first argument. And we've given reasons in our brief why we disagree with that. I'm happy to discuss that. But okay. But as I understand it, that's a backup argument.
Okay. All right. Just wanted to check on that. Thank you.
May it please the court. The court need look only to the PSA and its plain language to affirm the dismissal of Hamilton's off-lease production consent claims. And that's the case even if this court accepts as true everything that Mr. Hamilton has said about the lease, about the Robinson case, and about Section 5 of the PSA. And that's because Hamilton ignores, both in its brief and at oral argument, Section 2 of the PSA, which governs the effect of sharing wells. And a sharing well is a horizontal well drilled across lease lines and producing from multiple leases. And it says, and it's in tab A of our bench book, operations on or production from a sharing well will be considered operations on or production from the associated sharing well properties. And that's any and all lands which the horizontal well's laterals cross. That's defined in Section 3. Now, we know we have to read the lease together with the PSA because when Mr. Hamilton signed the PSA with Burlington, they agreed in Section 9 that the PSA amends the lease to conform to the PSA. Thus, the PSA in Section 2 amends this granting clause in the lease that Mr. Hamilton relies on that allows us to produce, they say, only from the minerals under his well, from his land. It now tells you that a sharing well drilled on his land that produces from multiple leases is still producing from his land within the meaning of the lease. And therefore, even if you assume for the purposes of argument that that granting clause confines us to drilling a well that produces from his lands, Section 2 amends the lease to say that a sharing well does indeed produce from his lands. And I would say Mr. Hamilton is correct that we did not pool in this case, but a PSA has the same legal consequence as a pooling agreement in the key operating and equipment case versus Hagar cited in our brief. The Supreme Court said the key legal consequence of pooling is that production anywhere on a pooled unit is treated as production on every tract in the land. And so too with the PSA.
So I have to have a question showing my ignorance of this area of oil and gas, but looking at the language of paragraph 2, operations on or production from a sharing well, does that suggest that, does that include the surface? Does that mean that you can drill on that surface where that well is going to be, that sharing well is going to be located?
Yes, and Your Honor, and I heard Mr. Hamilton's counsel today admit that the PSA, the purpose, it does allow us to drill sharing wells. He said not necessarily from his land, but it does indeed. The PSA says that we can drill sharing wells from any land that he owns.
Because you could drill from land right next to his acreage and go horizontally, right? And pull.
If we had a PSA with that other land, that is correct. So the sharing well can be drilled on any lease that it's drilled on. It's considered production from that lease, but also any other leases that the lateral is drilled under the lease and has take points, which are the holes, the perforations that actually allow the oil and gas from under other leases to come into it.
But this suggests or implies that
if you agree that these operations are allowed, that includes the surface.
Yes, Your Honor, and as the court said in the Western Atlas case that's cited in our brief, the right to drill would be absolutely worthless if you didn't also have the dominant state's right to use the surface to drill. And so that is I take issue with this idea that once you have a PSA, you need a separate document for a surface use agreement. No case says that.
And why do you think they got a surface agreement in that regard? Just for the trees? Is that what?
Yes, Your Honor. It was, and that is, you know, obviously these are unambiguous agreements, but to the extent you want to look at the record, it was undisputed that the surface use agreement was for these particular consents in the lease, the cutting live oak or pecan trees, getting multiple pipelines, or the location of access roads. It was not, and that is what the surface use agreement says. The second page, when they actually agree, that's all they're agreeing to. They're not agreeing, yes, you have the right to drill off lease production. The surface use was confined to those.
I did have a question about that, because
sure.
Number two says surface owners consent to the point of entry. And what's the point of entry?
To the property,
to
an
okay.
access road, then to
not
take
entry.
You to the pad.
Okay.
Yes, right, from a public road. Or.
What about the argument that, you know, the Robinson case generally limits, you know, the extension of what the primary lease was like, and then when you take into consideration, as we heard, the huge burden on the surface. I mean, this is not a small little pad. This is, what, 3 or 4 football fields?
So, Your Honor, I don't recall the record comparing it to football fields, but regardless, there.
I think it said 20 acres or something. It had an acreage amount that constituted the pad, which was an enormous amount. I don't remember the exact acreage, but.
Well, I will say that yes, these pads, to be efficient and to maximize the recovery of resources for the benefit of both lessor and lessee, and to minimize waste, which the legislature has defined waste as building too many wells to get the same amount of resources, to minimize that, we do build these pads that can handle multiple wells at once, 6 to 12. But the record shows that this ranch had, I think it already had 7 pads on the ranch, one of which was on Mr. Hamilton's surface. So they had already, and Mr. Hamilton signed the lease. This is not something that was imposed upon him. He signed the lease with his family members for their mutual benefit of developing the jointly held mineral interests underneath their land. So these pads were something that he agreed to. And again, the record shows that he testified at trial, his objection to the location of the pad was because he argued that this is where he had seen jaguarundi's habitat. And he didn't say you can't build any pad on my property, and he knew it was an off-lease pad. He said that they gave that Burlington had given him Plaintiff's Exhibit 8 that showed it was going to drill off-lease. He knew all that. His objection was that this was in the jaguarundi's habitat, and he said you can drill this same pad with these same wells 1,000 feet away. So there was not an objection at the time to the off-lease. It was all about the jaguarundi. That's what we went to trial on, and that's what the jury decided against Mr. Hamilton, if that answers the court's question. Okay. But again, I think going back to Robinson, the Supreme Court, Robinson was a Supreme Court case, and many years later in the Hagar case, the Supreme Court said, and I say that the plaintiff and Hagar relied on the exact same language that Mr. Hamilton relies on here. And the court said, no, Robinson did not involve pooling. It didn't involve a PSA. It didn't involve any kind of agreement treating production from a well as production from all lands from which the well draws. And Robinson didn't even involve an oil and gas well that drilled off lease. It was solely about a saltwater well on Mr. Robinson's property. They were using, he said that the lessee was using 3 million barrels of salt water to water flood a unit that he was not a part of. So this had nothing to do with drilling and producing off less. And it talked about the increased burden. And there it was that, you know, you were using many more salt water barrels to benefit these lands that he had no connection to. I think the evidence in this case was that drilling horizontally for multiple leases it's no greater burden on the surface than drilling for only under one piece of property. And in fact, it's the only way, I think that the Supreme Court has said this, in the Lightning Oil case. It's really the only way to efficiently maximize recovery of resources in this tight shale play where you don't have these conventional reservoirs underneath the land, and you're trying to, again, minimize waste, which the legislature has defined as drilling a lot of wells to get the same amount of oil and gas. But I think, you know, and Justice Silva, you had asked the question of, does the lease alone permit off-lease drilling? Because it doesn't prohibit it. Exactly right. It doesn't prohibit it. And our we do have an alternative argument that the lease alone, when applied to the modern reality of horizontal drilling, does not, I mean, that it itself does not prohibit us from drilling off-lease. And the Supreme Court said in the, you know, the Marcus Cable case that technological innovations can be applied to oil and gas leases if they further the, you know, the purpose for which the parties contracted, which was production. But I don't think the court needs to reach that today because you have this plain language of the PSA. You have Section 2. I think that's the only thing that court needs to look at. And you've got the effect of pooling. Mr. Hamilton admits that if this well had drilled from other leases through pooling, that he wouldn't have any complaint. Well, the PSA and the treatises we've cited show that is another form of drilling from multiple leases at once in the most efficient way possible.
Well, let's talk about Provision 5.
That, yes.
You're getting to that?
Yes. Would okay. you like me to? I didn't yes. know if you had a question. I'm happy to talk
ahead.
About it. Okay.
I think we can almost read that both ways, it seems like, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, argument? So I would say on Section 5, if the court reaches it, which I don't think it needs to, but it provides a second independent way to affirm the judgment. Because it does provide a surface use agreement. Again, there's no case says you have to have a separate surface use agreement. Paragraph 5 is entitled surface use, and it says they are giving an easement over the owner's land to drill and explore for any sharing well. And again, in Western Atlas, you know, the ability to drill is pointless if you can't get on the land to actually drill for it. And I think Mr. Hamilton's only response, and I heard him concede that if he didn't have this subject to provision in 5DI, that yes, the rest of 5 does grant a surface use easement to drill sharing wells. But so the way he reads 5DI is to basically negate everything that came before and nullify it and say, yes, here's all these surface use easements, but now we're going to take them right back and say, look to the lease. So we're not giving you really. And that is an inherently unreasonable interpretation, and it violates, the well-known rules of construction that this court has recognized, that you don't read contracts to render provisions meaningless. I think all 5DI means, and again, Section 9 of the PSA that Mr. Hamilton signed tells us we need to read these together. In an event of conflict, the PSA controls, but fundamentally we're amending the lease to conform to the PSA. And so when you read it, it says go back to the lease for things, these very specific surface use that we care about, cutting live oak and pecan trees. But it's not saying, oh, all that stuff we just gave you before, the right to use the surface to drill sharing well, now we're taking that back. That would be pointless. Let's see. I think he also talked about, I think Mr. Hamilton stated this more strongly in his brief. Well, all I was agreeing to was to allow a well to be drilled on somebody else's property that then could come under mine. But, of course, that's not what the PSA says. The PSA expressly talks about a sharing well can be drilled on his land or anyone's land. I mean, could have contracted for such an agreement, but he didn't. And I think the surrounding circumstances, the uncontroverted evidence was that thousands of these PSAs were sent by Burlington to all royalty owners in this area in the Eagle Ford Shale. And so under this theory, nobody granted permission to drill a sharing well on anybody's property, which makes no sense. And again, these are just not reasonable interpretations. Your Honor, you did ask about the surface use agreement, and you are correct that it is our position that for the primary issue on appeal, whether we had the right to drill for off-lease production, surface use agreement, you never need to get to it. It's moot. The case law says if you have one agreement that grants you the right, whether another agreement grants the same right is moot. It's only relevant to the extent that Mr. Hamilton would seek some lesser relief that about the consent to the trees and the road, not to the off-leash drilling. And I think in that case, all the court needs to do is look at the language of the lease, which defines all the lessors as lessor, whether one or more, and then says that a lessor may grant consent to these specific uses. And Mr. Hamilton's brief never grapples with this language, never addresses it. His only real argument is that, well, Mary Ellen didn't sign in her capacity as lessor, but of course she signed in her individual capacity. If you look at the lease, which is PX9, she says she's I'm sorry, the surface use agreement, she said she's signing in her individual capacity as well as her capacity of trustee of the Brothers Trust. And that there was no question of representative capacity here. It was individual capacity, and that includes a role as a lessor. There's no law that says when you sign in your individual capacity, you have to list all your different roles and statuses. And,
but isn't it true, like, Hamilton's signature was not on there? And at that time, I guess it's your position that it was still an undivided interest because the deed hadn't been recorded?
So he claims an equitable interest. You're right. He says that he got this service at this surface tract individually in a settlement agreement that was not recorded at the time of the surface use agreement. So he says he has an equitable interest, and therefore she didn't have the right to sign and affect his surface. But our argument is that she did have the right under the lease, equitable interest or not. When Mr. Hamilton signed that lease, he agreed with all his other family members to give any lessor the right to consent to these particular types of uses. And that was, Justice Longoria, you said that some of these were, some of these surfaces were held in common before they entered the lease. And, of course, under common law, co-tenants have the right to use and improve property without their co-tenants' consent. So that was carrying forward that approach. But also, I think it's consistent with the theme that runs throughout all of these family documents, is that they wanted to develop the oil and gas for their mutual benefit. And that starts with the lease and allowing a single lessor to grant these kind of specific uses. And it runs all the way through the settlement agreement, paragraph 15 of the settlement agreement. They agreed not to interfere with the drilling or exploration on the property. And I think that's what Mary Ellen was doing, is trying to facilitate this mutual goal of producing the jointly held minerals. And if anything, this lawsuit is a sign of the thing that the family was trying to avoid through the settlement agreement, which is a lessor holding up production of minerals through a surface use consent argument.
Well, they seem to acknowledge, though, that his potential ownership, because on paragraph 4, where they say if and when the ownership of that particular service should change in the next 6 months. So they know that there's something going on.
So you're right, Your Honor, and that goes to, and this is if, and I think the court only reaches this if it disagrees that the plain language of the lease allowed a single lessor to sign the surface use agreement. If you get past that, then you have to say, this court said in Hawkins versus Hawkins, an equitable interest owner, if it wants to set aside an agreement that the legal title owner, which was Mary Ellen at the time, made, you have to prove that the party she contracted with was not a bona fide purchaser, which would include that you'd have to show that they took with notice of your equitable interest.
Was Mary Ellen really the title holder at that time? Weren't they all?
Yeah, they concede that because this at the time, what happened in the settlement agreement is there was some swapping of tracks, and Mike Hamilton was going to get T.G. Hamilton's surface track. That's where this
but
was.
None of this,
and she was the trustee for that, T.G.'s trust, so
yes.
They held the legal title. And then Mike said, we were going to give me that T.G.'s trust surface track. But I didn't have it yet, but you were going to give it to me, so I had an equitable interest. So
and then she also acknowledges that in that document, if they do get some payment, she will render it to Mike.
So you're correct. The surface use agreement does say, if and when surface ownership should change, we will pay the surface use damages, which is in the lease. We will pay that to Mike. And, the case law says that if and when shows that there's a possibility that it could happen, not that that's not – conclusive evidence that we knew of his interest, and if anything, notice is usually a question of fact. May I continue? I still have time. Okay. I was worried I was running out. Notice is usually a question of fact. I think the fact that Mary Ellen told the Burlington landman that the settlement wasn't final, and that much of the evidence that Mr. Hamilton relies on to argue that he conclusively proved our notice was from the temporary injunction hearing, which is not part of the trial record, was never made part of the trial record. But even if you look at that, that's Mr. Osment, our surface landman's testimony. That raises a fact issue, too. So Mr. Osment said, yes, Mike Hamilton told me that he was going to get this land in the settlement. But then his brother, Tom, told me the settlement wasn't final. Mary Ellen told me the settlement was final. And then Tom told me that we tried to settle, the family had tried to settle many times, and it always fell apart. And then that Mr. Osment said, I asked Tom, I asked Mike, I asked Mary Ellen, please give me the settlement agreement. It wasn't recorded at that time. Please give me some kind of documentation so I can figure this out. And nobody did. So I think there is at least a fact issue on notice and whether a diligent inquiry would have led to notice. Also, if the court were to reach this issue, he has not conclusively proven that if Mr. Hamilton had been asked for his consent, that he could have reasonably withheld it. That is a requirement of the lease for all of these surface uses. His brief does not talk about it at all, so he certainly didn't conclusively prove that. And if anything, I think the evidence raises a fact issue that he could not have reasonably withheld it, because he himself had a history of clearing these areas of trees in the past. And then he also, when he told Burlington, you can have a pad for your off-lease drilling, but you need to move it 1,000 feet. That was in a much more heavily vegetated and wooded area that would have required cutting down many more trees. So at a minimum, I think there is a fact issue on that, Your Honor. The court doesn't have any more questions. I'll sit down. Thank you very much.
It pleases the court. Just three issues. The first is this paragraph 2 of the production sharing agreement. The next, assuming I have time, the issue we're talking about, roads and trees usage, and then finally whether there's notice, the evidence of notice. So on paragraph 2 of the production sharing agreement, let me say several things about this. First, it says nothing about surface use. Nothing in this paragraph authorizes use of Mr. Hamilton's surface.
Well, that's why I asked, it's operations sort of imply that or suggest it, or you're saying it does not?
No, and let me explain why. If you look at the subject, however, to provision we've been talking about, It says all above ground surface use and surface operations described herein, meaning in this document. Herein refers to the document generally. All operations described herein shall be conducted in accordance with the lease. So that incorporates.
So what's the purpose of it then? I tend to agree that it sort of negates the whole purpose of this paragraph if you read it that way.
Of paragraph 2? Yeah, so that's my third point. The purpose of paragraph 2 is for the production allocation. And you don't see the full paragraph 2 quoted there in the bench exhibit. The bench exhibit shows the first sentence. The second sentence is, Burlington shall pay royalties under the terms of the applicable lease on the share of production as calculated in Section 1B. So this is all about, you consider production from other, from everyone who's part of this production sharing agreement as though it's produced from the lease. So the production calculation is done on all drilling, regardless of whose lease it's on. So that's for purpose. The purpose of it is for the calculation. But again, it is limited by this subject, however, to provision, which incorporates the limitations of the lease. So on the issue of the surface, the use of the surface for road removal and trees, the surface use agreement that Mary Ellen Hamilton signed cannot give authorization for Mike Hamilton's surface. And let me just briefly describe the fact situation. Mr. Hamilton did not own that surface before the partition agreement. So the partition agreements happen, there's a swap, as counsel explained, and then he becomes the owner of that surface. And that occurs before, of course, after the lease, but before the production sharing agreement is signed. It's about the judgment. There is a filed judgment in the court records 2 weeks before the production sharing agreement is signed that allocates this property to Mr. Hamilton. It's not recorded in the deed records, but there is a filed judgment. Burlington emphasizes in their brief the distinction between a lessor and a surface owner, and it says you can consent to tree removal and road entry as a lessor. But then if you look at the surface use agreement, it specifically says Mary Ellen is signing this as surface owner, which she was not the surface owner. It says nothing about her signing as the lessor. So it doesn't give that consent on behalf of the current owner of the property. And if you think about it, if you had a rule that allowed, we're not talking about co-tenants here, we're talking about co-lessors, people with separate properties who are all on this big lease, it would be stunning if one lessor could consent to destructive activities on another lessor's surface. It just doesn't make much sense. And then finally, on the notice issue, I'm not sure I've seen anything in the record to suggest that, and I just don't know, but I haven't seen anything that suggests that Mr. Osment requested a copy of the agreement. Perhaps he did, but I have not seen that in the record. But I can say that this judgment was on file in the courthouse before the production sharing agreement was signed. There was, at a minimum, notice of a dispute or a question about who owned the property, and that is sufficient for inquiry notice, and as a matter of law, that does not trump the rights of someone who has equitable title to the property. Thank you.
Thank you. Very interesting case. It will be under submission.